So Far from the Bamboo Grove by Yoko Kawashima Watkins, Chapter 9. Ko grieved that she had not returned to the station before Mother went. "If I had only been 30 minutes earlier," she said, sobbing. "Your smart idea was not that smart," I said, crying myself and remembering how my eyes had searched the crowd for Ko. Then I said as an afterthought, "Mother told me to hang on to the wrapping cloth." "Naturally, it contains all our underwear, extra clothes and papers," Ko said. "They're more important than our rucksacks." But she didn't sound as if she meant that. I remembered how she had told me to hang on, hang on. I think she meant the cloth itself was important. But now in her grief, this was not important to Ko. "Are you hungry?" she asked. "More tired than hungry," I said, and lay down on the tatami mat. Although the straw mat was old and smelled musty, it felt good on my back. The tiny room had only 4 mats, but it protected us from wind and from thieves. "Tomorrow is Sunday," I thought. "I can sleep to my heart's content." "Do you know what I miss in the station?" asked Ko. "What?" I was startled that Ko could actually miss those horrible surroundings. "The clock. I don't know what time it is now," she replied. "It's getting dark and cold." "And I am going to sleep," I said, because I did not want to be reminded of the sadness at the station. I spread one blanket on the floor and covered myself with two. Ko came into the blankets. She cuddled close to me and remarked that the room was much colder than the station because of drafts from downstairs. "But we can sleep without worrying about thieves or being attacked," I said, earnestly wishing she would never again bring up the word station. I could not help going over and over the way Mother had died and her last words. In the darkness, I faced Mother's mess kit urn and hoped it would speak to me. I tossed and turned. "What's wrong?" asked Ko. "I can't sleep. I thought you were tired. Mother's last words haunt me." "She only meant to hang on to all we have in the cloth," said Ko. "Now let's sleep. I'll cook you something good tomorrow." I persisted. "Answer this question. Every time Mother went to the toilet to change, she took the wrapping cloth with her. Remember, she emptied everything from the cloth that time before she went to the toilet and made you put everything in again when she returned. Because she had a unique way of taking off her underpants and putting her trousers back on, she used the cloth as a hip wrapper." "In the small toilet with the door locked?" I asked. "You never know about locks in public toilets. Besides, she was old-fashioned." Again, Ko snuggled against me. She felt warm, and soon, as my cold body warmed, I went to sleep. I woke when a streetcar passed, giving a long whistle, and shook the warehouse. It was dawn. Ko was snoring, and I lay still. What would she fix us for breakfast, I wondered. Hot rice and soup with lots of fresh tofu and green onions in it would be a great treat. Mrs. Masada had paid for the funeral truck, so Ko had that 20 yen. "I hope she'll use it today for food," I thought. The more I thought about good food, the hungrier I got. I wished Ko would wake up. When I turned, I faced Mother's altar, and again her last words came back. "I'm going to investigate that wrapping cloth," I thought, and I slipped quietly from the blanket. "What are you doing?" Ko asked. "It's Sunday. Let's sleep." "I'm going to check the wrapping cloth." "Do it later." But I could not sleep anymore. I crawled over to the wrapping bundle. It was a soft, canvas-like material, double, and Ko had tied it so tightly I could not undo the knot. "Honorable sister, please wake up." "I am awake. Untie the knot, and then I won't bother you." She grumbled that I gave her no peace, but she untied the knot. I pulled out our socks, underwear, extra trousers, and blouses. At the bottom were the insurance papers, birth certificates, report sheets, and father's name seal. In Japan, working people carry name seals, in jade or ivory perhaps, to stamp their names on papers. Father's seal was jade. "See, little one, Mother meant these are the important things," said Ko, picking up the seal. "This is very important. Maybe Mother wanted us to collect some insurance." She looked at the policies, but somehow we both knew any insurance was valueless now. "Now put everything back." She crawled into the blankets again, and I put the papers back, then folded our humble garments neatly. I took one corner of the cloth and folded it over. The opposite corner felt heavier and stiff, and I heard paper slipping down somewhere between the 2 layers of cloth. "Honorable sister, get up," I said. I stood up and turned on the light. "Now what?" said Ko. "Something is between the layers." Ko sat up then. She removed everything from the wrapping cloth and examined the seam carefully. At the corner of the cloth where I had felt stiffness was a zipper. Ko opened it, and the cloth separated to 2 pieces. Here was a square pocket. Ko had known of the other pockets, but not this one. She pulled out 1,000 yen and 100 yen bills, one after the other, then Hideo's, Ko's, and my savings books. But the money had been drawn out on July 15th, 2 weeks before we fled. Now I understood why Mother had taken the wrapper to the toilet every time. She did not need to change. She needed money. Ko counted a little over 36,000 yen, $100. We looked at each other in amazement. Mother said she brought some cash from Korea, Ko said. This is where she hid it. She put back all the money. We were not going to use that money, she said. It would be for emergencies only, for when we became ill and had to pay a doctor. She instructed me to be sure and grab the wrapping bundle in case of fire. Let's go outdoors and wash, Ko said, folding the top blanket. The soft sunlight beamed through the window and felt warm on my back. The water was icy, but we washed. Walking back around the factory building, we discovered an old abandoned fruit box that would make an excellent cupboard table combination and also could be our study desk. We washed it and tipped it against our stairway to dry. There was a water faucet outside the warehouse, and we filled our 5 canteens. Although it was Sunday, I heard people in the factory. The door was open, and I saw Mrs. Masuda. She waved to us to come in. She was talking to a man on crutches, her husband, and she introduced us. We bowed deeply to him to show our appreciation of their letting us stay in the warehouse. I've heard about you girls, Mr. Masuda said. Did you sleep well? Were you afraid? No, I answered, but I woke up when a streetcar passed. That's the first car, 5:30, he said. It wakes me too. If you girls need some pots, said Mrs. Masuda, I have some old ones. We live right over there. She pointed across the tracks. Oh, thank you, said Ko. And is there a grocery nearby? Mrs. Masuda said the general store was a half a mile to the east, and we walked there. Ko bought 4 cups of rice, 1/2 a pound of miso, a bean paste, and 1 cake of fresh tofu. My mouth was already watering. She bought needles, thread, a razor blade, and a bar of laundry soap, too. What are you going to do with the razor blade? I asked. After breakfast, you are going to rip the soldiers' uniforms apart so I can make you a winter coat, she replied. She built a fire outside the warehouse, and I went to borrow 2 cooking pots. Ko cooked a cup of rice and made miso soup, just as I had dreamed, but with no green onion. It was the only decent breakfast we had had in almost 5 months. Eat slowly. Chew well, said Ko. What's left will be our supper. She carried the utensils to the stream to wash them, and I sat against the sunny wall of the warehouse ripping the uniforms. As I clipped with the sharp blade, I shivered, thinking of what would have happened to us if the airplane had not dropped a bomb and killed the Korean communist soldiers. A fraction of a moment, I thought, had been the difference between life and death. The 3 uniforms became pieces and bits. I took them to the stream, rubbed the bar of soap on each piece, and pounded them with a wooden stick I had borrowed from a factory worker. I pounded especially where the material was stained with blood, trying hard to forget the ordeal we had gone through. The workers in the factory listened to the radio as they worked, and I also noticed the factory had a small wall clock. They worked from 8 to 4, so we could guess what time it was. I got up by the first streetcar, and when Mr. Masuda closed the factory, it was 4:30. The last streetcar came by at 12:30. As the days rolled into December, the frost grew heavier. I wore my summer trousers and blouse and my little red overcoat from Nanam, as Ko had not finished my overcoat from the soldiers' uniforms. When the first snow came, I caped myself with my blanket. As I entered the classroom, 60 eyes stared at me. I stared back. One girl said, "Rag doll, aren't you ashamed to come to school like that?" "Ashamed of what?" I said firmly. "My tuition is paid. I have the right to come to this school." I folded my blanket over the back of my chair, took out my English reader, and began reading the sentences. "Trash picker and rag doll are good names for her," another said. Then Mr. Yoshida came in, and there was silence. They always stopped when the teacher appeared, and I was too proud to tell the teacher how they were treating me. I wanted to scream at the whole class, to tell them they were stupid and had much to learn about life and death. I had a hard time controlling myself. "I will show them how good I am at academic work. I will beat every one of them with my grades," I thought. "The grades are the only weapon I have now." Though I was terribly unhappy in the classroom, it was my joy to go to the furnace room and talk with the stuttering man, Mr. Naito. He was the only friend I had in the school. He saved for me books, glue, art pencils, crayons, India ink, and calligraphy brushes. I learned while talking with him and picking up papers that because of his speech handicap, he had not been accepted in the Japanese Navy. He had had a hard time finding a job as he had only a primary education. He had finally found this job. "Because," he said, "all the men were killed or wounded, and the school could not find a normal speaking person." Whenever Mr. Naito talked with me, he stuttered less and less, which made me very happy. Maybe Father can cure him completely when he comes, I thought. "If my father comes home safely," I said, smiling at him, "will you meet him? He is a fine man and fun." "He will come home. He must come home." He patted my back. Mr. Naito had been by my side ever since I came to this school, and I did not know how to thank him. But I decided that at the end of the term I would show him report sheets that said straight A+. As I left the furnace room one day, I noticed a cart full of cans and empty bottles. What was he doing with them? I asked. I sell them, he said. The girls are very wasteful. Most of their fathers are prestigious, and the girls are badly spoiled. If I bring some cans, will you sell them for me? I asked. Bring cans any time, he said, slowly but without stuttering. So my walking posture changed. I developed the habit of looking down when I walked to search for cans and bottles. Whenever I found one, I put it in Ko's rucksack and took it to Mr. Naito. The price of everything had tripled. Ko and I continued to live poorly, for Ko would not touch Mother's hidden money. She was doing well at Seiyan University, majoring in home economics. The professors liked Ko's sewing, and often they handed her kimonos to make for department stores. She did especially well designing women's Western garments. The department store did not want leftover material, so Ko kept it. She made babies' and toddlers' clothes and children's play items. These she gave to me to sell from door to door on my way home from school. You can have that money, she said. Buy yourself a pair of shoes. For a pair of shoes, I worked hard to sell the items Ko made. Whatever I earned, I placed beneath Mother's urn. I felt secure with Mother watching my earnings. Ko began asking her classmates to save all their scraps. From them, she made beanbags for girls, the traditional New Year's toy. She showed me how to make them, too, and said I should make a couple of them each night when I had finished my homework. Because New Year's was coming, many families with little girls wanted to buy beanbags, and I wanted a new pair of shoes badly. When I had enough bags, I went to this house and that house one afternoon to sell. Then I walked home on the car tracks, jumping aside when a car approached. Whenever I came to a station and saw a newspaper flapping on a bench, I picked it up for fuel. Ko was already home and had waited supper for me. What took you so long? I was worried. I sold everything, I said happily, and placed the money under Mother's urn. You must come home before dark, said Ko. I don't want you wandering around. I talked back. I was not wandering. I want a pair of shoes. Your safety is more important than shoes, Ko said. Let's eat. As we ate, Ko happened to cast her eyes on the front page of the newspaper. She stopped eating and picked up the paper to read. She said the government had just opened a new port, Maizuru, for refugees arriving from Korea and Manchuria. Also, the government had been negotiating with Russia to let the remaining Japanese come home. The port of Fukuoka, where we landed, will be closed this week, said Ko. They'll move the refugee center to Maizuru, and that's only an hour's ride from here. Let's go this weekend and make some investigations about Father and Hideo. Another piece of good news, she read to me, was that the government would give refugees futons as a New Year's gift. Ko beamed. Now Mr. Prime Minister Yoshida is really talking. All I have to do is take our refugee certificates to the city hall. Let's do it Friday afternoon. Thinking of sleeping between futon and comforters excited me, and I could hardly wait for Friday to come. Ko borrowed two long ropes from Mr. Masuda to tie the futons, and we took a streetcar. She showed our refugee papers and Mother's at the small window. Three of you? Asked the man. Where is the third? Mother could not come, answered Ko. He stamped the certificates, and in a back room a lady handed us the futons. Ko tied a rope around one set, cotton-filled mattress and comforter, and put it on my back. They were so heavy that I staggered. Ko carried the other two sets. While waiting for the streetcar, I asked her why she had taken Mother's certificate. She said she had not registered Mother's death, so that as far as Kyoto City was concerned, Mother was still alive. We must have extra bedding for Honorable Father or Hideo. The bedding was a load on my back, and the rope dug in where I was wounded, but I did not complain, for the joy of sleeping in bed like everybody else made me all excited. I couldn't wait to make our beds and to lie down and feel what it was to sleep on a futon. Though this bedding was not nearly as fine as the bedding we had slept in Korea, we were most appreciative, for we had really shivered at night with no heat in the warehouse. Ko and I stayed up late that night sewing. She made little clothes and I made small cloth dolls and beanbags. When they were done, I turned to another important task, to write Hideo's name large on the pages of the newspaper in India ink and our address in the corner. Ko made a pot of paste with flour and water. We had to break the ice in the stream next morning to wash. Ko put pieces of ice in the mess kits and built a fire to melt it. She poured hot water into a borrowed wash pan, and we took it upstairs and washed. What was left in the mess kits we drank to warm ourselves. Going to the toilet in the outhouse was a cold business, too. I let Ko go first because she left a little body heat and warm footprints where I squatted. Then we went to Mizuru, Ko carrying the little items we had made, and I the paste in Hideo's name papers. Hideo's name was not on record at the refugee center as having landed, So we pasted the name papers on the bulletin board, the walls of the port, and just everywhere. Every inch of space was filled with other names and messages. All that Saturday, we stayed in the vicinity of the port to sell our items. Some housewives with small children were delighted to buy the toys and clothes. Others went through them, then changed their minds, and our hearts sank. At some houses, well-dressed, well-made-up housewives looked us over and slammed the door, but we kept on trying houses all day. Finally, we had sold everything. Co bought two hot sweet potatoes from a pushcart man, and we sat on a concrete wall by the waterfront, swinging our legs, letting the December wind blow our inch-and-a-half-long hair, and ate the potatoes. The sun sank slowly, leaving a gorgeous crimson display on the water. As it tucked the earth to rest, we held hands and headed for home. Finally, New Year's Eve day arrived. Co was not feeling well, and she overslept. She jumped from the bed, mumbling that she would be late for class, and told me to come straight home from school and build the fire because she had something to do at the university. "Why do you have to do it on New Year's Eve day?" I complained. "I'm afraid to build the fire." "Do it. It's about time you learn to do things." She grabbed her books and blanket. "Don't forget to lock the door." I had ill feeling toward Co. Because of that idea of hers, she had not been there when Mother died, and how Mother had wanted to see her. Since Mother died, she had become bossier than ever, and now she was telling me to come home fast and build a fire for supper. We had nothing to eat in the apple box cabinet, nothing to make a meal of. Co had been handling all the money, so I had no money to buy groceries. I was not about to spend my little earnings beneath Mother's urn. That was for my shoes. No, I would not come right home from school. I would sell some more items and earn some more money. I had learned to take the girl's abuse, but remembering the way Co had left the warehouse and my talking back made me terribly lonely during the day, especially when a girl asked me, "How long are you coming to school with rags on?" I longed for Father and Mother and wished Father would come home safely to embrace me in his wide arms. As I gathered papers in the furnace room, I was sniffing and wiping away tears and wondering when I could lead a normal life with Father and Hideo. How I envied the girls who lived with their parents and sisters and brothers. I could almost see and hear their happy laughter at mealtime. Mr. Naito had emptied cans into a huge box. When he saw me, he took out his billfold and handed me 5 yen, saying I had done well collecting cans and should keep it up. He would take my cans any time. Then he said, without much stuttering, "Why tears?" "I was thinking of my father and brother," I said slowly. "I hope they are not dead." I sniffed some more. "They will return. I know they will," said Mr. Naito, and wished me Happy New Year. Because it was New Year's Eve day, I had a feeling that many people would be going to a shrine or to the central part of the city. Instead of going from house to house, I decided to stand on the street among the small pushcart shops. Perhaps people going home from work would stop and buy what I displayed. I chose the Kitano Shrine, popular for the pushcart shops and always busy at rush hours. Many people were buying things from the pushcarts, and I looked for a good busy spot to display my wares. Suddenly, I saw Ko. She sat on the cold ground polishing a man's shoes. I froze. I realized then that with this idea, she had been feeding me, and now I was sure she wanted to get some traditional foods, perhaps fluffy rice cakes, to welcome the brand new year. Oh, honorable sister, I swallowed lumps. Co finished polishing the man's shoes. He handed her money, and she put it in her pocket. The man, his shoes shiny as a new coin, passed by me. Co put on her soldier's hat, caped herself with her blanket, and called, "Shoeshine! Shoeshine!" I turned and hurried homeward, Ko's clear shoeshine call sounding in my good ear all the way. I spent my shoe money and the 5 yen I had earned from selling cans to Mr. Naito to buy something good to eat for my honorable sister and me, something for our New Year's Eve feast. Snow was falling when I got home from the general store. I had bought 2 cups of rice, a fish, narrow strips of seaweed, an orange, a tiny bag of green tea, and a small, cheaply made teapot. I wanted to pour green tea for Ko at our New Year's Eve feast. First, I had to build a fire. Leaving my small rucksack with all the things I had bought by the stairway, I went to the back side of the warehouse, beneath the eaves, where Ko had made a small hibachi with stones. I crumpled some newspapers and added wood scraps that Ko had gathered the night before to dry out. When the pieces caught fire, I added thick blocks and fanned with a piece of cardboard, as Ko always did. But the fire died, leaving nothing but smoke. I repeated the procedure, using more paper and more scraps, and when it was good and red, I put on the blocks that had not burned. I fanned and kept on fanning until the blocks began to burn. I set the mess kit on the fire. It had been filled with water before I left for school, but now the water was ice. While it melted, I went to the outside tap for drinking water, but the tap was frozen. So I rushed to the stream, cracked the frozen water with my heels, and put all the ice chips into the bucket to wash and cook the rice. The water in the mess kit was boiling vigorously when Ko appeared, covered with snow. "It's very cold and windy," she said. She took the snow from her blanket and soldier's hat. "Honorable sister, welcome home," I said. "Your hot water is ready." "I knew you could do it," said Ko. "I think we need another hibachi to cook our supper," I said. "Why?" "One to cook rice, one to roast the fish." "Who said we were going to roast a fish?" asked Ko. "I did. I bought a fish." "Where did you get the money?" "Mr. Naito paid me for the cans, and I used my shoe money." "Oh, you dummy," exclaimed Ko, but she did not sound angry. "I had money. See?" She pulled out a few yen from an inside pocket, and on my mental screen I saw her shining shoes and calling to get more customers. "It's New Year's Eve. I will be 12. You will be 17," I said. "We must celebrate." In Japan, everyone gains a year not on the date of his birth, but at the new year. Ko set the bucket on the hot fire for the rice and drank some of the hot water in the bowl to warm herself, and while she did that, I managed to take the tea bag and the teapot from my rucksack and hide them in my overcoat pocket. We did need another hibachi. We gathered stones, some frozen to the ground, and Ko built a fire. She washed the rice, saving the white rice water, and told me to wash the fish in it, but leave the head and the insides as they were. Then she found a long stick, sharpened and smoothed it to make a skewer, and I roasted the fish, squatting next to Ko as she cooked the rice and made miso soup with seaweed. It was a humble New Year's Eve meal that we ate in our home, but both of us were overwhelmed by it. We wondered what Father and Hideo were eating that night and how they were keeping themselves warm. We knew the severe winter in Manchuria and northern Korea. We saw the orange in front of Mother's urn. "I should not have bought that expensive fruit," she told me. "I could not afford flowers for Mother on New Year's," I said. "We can eat the orange sometime." "Go out and get your mess kit," said Ko. "The hot water will be ready for us to drink." So I went down. I rinsed the teapot, my heart bouncing at the thought of Ko's surprised and joyful face when I made tea for her. As I came back up, Ko was setting aside the wooden rice bowls and chopsticks, and in the center of the apple box table were fluffy red and white rice cakes, the New Year's traditional food. "Happy New Year, little one," said Ko, bowing slightly. "The rice cakes are for you." "Happy New Year, honorable sister," I bowed to her deeply, for all her efforts and all her concern for me. I put the rice bowls back on the table. I bought out the still wet teapot from one pocket and the tea bag from the other. "Green tea is for you," I said, and poured the tea into her bowl. Suddenly, Ko was crying. "Don't you dare spend any more of your shoe money," she scolded, sniffing back the tears. "We can live without tea." But she received her wooden rice bowl of green tea reverently in both hands, sipped it slowly, and let the tears roll down her face. "Ah, fine tea. I never expected this. Thank you, little one."